What's up, fight fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, October 23rd, 2023, and this week's episode, That Wild Night in Abu Dhabi. It is not because a lot of people partied like the hangover, it's because of UFC 294. Headlines, change-ups, and a lot of interruptions by officials. So we're going to get into all of that. And with a very packed weekend, we just move straight into boxing. And we will preview this Saturday's super event, Tyson Fury, Francis Ngannou, the big one. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Hello, Double G. Wow, what a wild night indeed.
And or wild, I guess for us, wild morning. Yeah, wild morning. Afternoon. Wild like, it was over before 2 p.m. Pacific.
Then you don't know what to do with yourself, right? It's like,
It's like, do I go touch some grass now?
Yeah. Fresh air, maybe. How you doing? Good?
You know what? I'm pretty good, you know? The site, we got a lot done, and obviously it's, you know, quite the thing. It's a weird one back-to-back when you're not there, because now it's like, well, you know, we got to be on the lookout. News and stuff happens at like the crack of dawn because they're, you know, about, if I'm not mistaken, 13 hours ahead, 11 hours ahead, something in that neighborhood. So, yeah, it's a little weird when they spend so much time in that part of the world and we're still trying to report on American time, but it's been good. What about you?
Yeah, pretty good. Busy weekend, just, you know, family coming over, friends coming over, and I did a lot of vacuuming, man, honestly. Just like, my son just leaves crumbs everywhere. A lot of vacuuming. That was my weekend.
You know, I have a coworker. She was rocking a shirt. We didn't have, like, uniforms. Yeah. But, you know, God bless, you know, 1-year-old daughter, and she has a t-shirt that says, Mom so hard. And it's like, yeah, it's like, that's your life, isn't it? She's like, you have no idea. No, I need to get you one. I asked her, and she's like, I don't know where I got it. I'll get back to you. But I was like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, man.
No, that sounds like, I listened to you, and I'm like, yeah, I think, you know, Natalie was momming too hard.
Yeah, too hard, man, too hard. But, you know, it is what it is. That's the job I signed up for, and I'm just going to keep trying to do a good job, so.
For sure, for sure. Well, let's get right into it. I mean, UFC 294, look, we're going to talk about a lot of the greater context afterward, doctors and all that. Let's talk about the fights we did get inside the cage. Starting with Islam Makhachev, Alexander Volkanovski. Volk, you saw it in the photos, and even when he was in the cage, looked just fine. Did not look quite as cut, but not out of shape. And, you know, that is not a knock on him, but you've seen what Volk looks like physically on a full camp for 55. This was not quite it. That being said, I will tell you I had full confidence that we were going to get a great effort regardless. And to be honest, we started just like that. Volk obviously, you know, gets out there feeling out process. Islam goes for a takedown. Volk rather, I don't want to use the word easy, but rather smoothly defends it. Didn't seem like he was panicked about Islam getting him to the ground. And you have that, you know, a little bit of a, I'll say dead time in the clinch. You know, they're kind of doing a little bit of jostling. They're not trying to make that first mistake. They get the break. Islam had been going for the kick in between those exchanges on the feet, and you know, he's looking at the body. Obviously, you know, for Islam, because Volk is so much shorter, those body kicks are probably a lot easier than the body punches. And he just sets it up, does a little bit of the look down, go high. Volk is clearly expecting something else. Gets cracked with the head kick, bounces off the temple. Volk was just too far gone. Not knocked out, but just really, you know, feet clearly gone from under him. Islam pins him against the fence and just pounds him out for the finish. Okay, yes, it was very impressive. Full credit to Islam, because if Volk signed on the dotted line, he weighed in, he showed up, it's because he felt he could win this fight.
Yeah.
And so you can't take points away from Islam because of the context of the 10-day short notice. But I can't help but say it, Natalie, as awesome as it was, I feel like he got the one rose, but he would have gotten his full bouquet. He would have received his flowers, you know what I mean? If Volk had been on a full camp. Because he got it done, and I couldn't help but think it's like, bruh, Volk shouldn't have taken 10 days' notice. Anyway, before I get into more of the context, what were your thoughts on the performance?
Yeah, I mean, I can't, I can't, yeah, I agree. You know, I it's like, you know, even Volkanovski didn't want to take away from Islam's win by saying, you know, short notice and stuff, but he also very delicately reminded everyone that he loves preparation, you know, to be prepared. But yeah, man, you know, you're a fighter, you want to get in there, and we'll get into the, you know, more about his mindset in a little bit. But specifically just to the fight, yeah, Volk looked good. Didn't look good physically, of course, it's a little soft, but that's to be expected. He was fine, as you say, with the takedown. He handled it, he was able to defend, stay on the feet. You know, the head kick, I think a lot of it just had to do with the height difference too. You know, the hand was in the right place, but Islam just swung that shin a little bit higher onto the top of the crown there. And man, Volk was eyes rolled in the back of his head. The sickest, like, just, oh man, makes you wanna, you know, turn away from the screen. Volk's head landed on whose knee? Was it his own knee
I
or
thought it
Hamza?
was, yeah, like
Yeah.
he buckled. He just simply buckled.
But then his head's like stuck on a knee, and Islam's just punching him, and his head is just bouncing off the knee. It was pretty gruesome, actually. And you know, seeing how upset Volk was in the cage after all is said and done, you know, it's not how you want to go out, especially so early. You want to at least put up a good fight and show that even if you don't win, you know, show the world like, hey, I am really just as good as this guy. Look what I did on 12 days' notice, you know. But I think it was a lot to ask of his body to cut so much weight. And then mentally, you know, he says in the post-fight press conference, I kept telling myself, you know, I gotta go, I gotta go, I wanna go. And so you can talk about the physical training that he didn't get because it was short notice, but also the mental training that he didn't get because it was short notice. You know, the mind and the body work together. And if you're not connecting the synapses from the brain to the body like you would normally in a full training camp, the messaging is delayed. And that seems like that's what happened here. The messaging was really delayed. And unfortunately for Volk, you know, it's worse when you do the second, when you do the rematch and you get murked right away, because then it sort of seals your fate, right? You'll probably never get a rematch, a third rematch, again, or not for a long, long time. And at that point, I mean, he's already 35, so there's a lot to think about here. But the silver lining for me, if I'm Volk, is, look, man, I stepped up, I did the best I could, I got caught, but still, I'm the kind of guy that just goes for it. And there's something very admirable about that.
The thing about these 2 week notice fights, and I've spoken to fighters, sometimes it is a business decision, and Volk and even Kamaru bit mentioned as much. When you say when you agree to step up on the dotted line, you don't have a full camp, and this and that, et cetera, travel, all this. You know what? If you don't think you can win the fight, then don't take it. If you sign up, you're saying, you know what, I'm gonna go out there believing I do have it, that the me that I have on 10 days' notice, even though I don't have a full camp and this
Yeah.
and that, I believe is enough to win this fight against the person across from me.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's just fighter mentality, which is why it is so admirable. It is so, it's the most relatable sport to the human spirit because everyone has their fight in them and, you could project that into these contests. That being said, the next fight, look, Ilia for Volk, he is still obviously the featherweight champion. He's gonna be the champion, he's gonna be regarded. There's gonna be the whole context, well, full camp Volk versus short notice Volk. That's obviously gonna be a big part of this. The one thing I would say is that now, because we talked about it, what's left for Volk at 55? I think that if he's Floyd Mayweather, Ilia feels like Canelo. young kid, got a lot of superstar potential, but you're up against the man, right? And so while Ilya may not have the clout today if Volk beats him, you get the feeling he could have a lot of it tomorrow in the future, and it's a victory over Ilya today would age like wine for Volk. That is what it is. And not saying that that's a shoo-in. Ilya's obviously on a roll and really good. But when you talk about, all right, the context, it's like, all right, he's on paper, you would argue the best featherweight champion. You beat Aldo, you beat Holloway twice, you've beaten all these other guys. That's a huge deal. But now you want to talk about the 55 component, and you want to talk about, him for his legacy and how good he could really be. You're right. A third fight, specifically with Islam Makhachev, I don't see it happening. And so to get to the short of it, now you talk about business. He fights Ilya. Could he stick around for Giga Chikadze and all these other guys? Sure. Obviously he could. Why not? Or if you talk about you coming back to 55, now there's a lot of things that got to be answered. For example, if he's not champion, does he get pay-per-view points? Should he get them? What does that mean for the rest of it? What does that mean for 145 and what they want to do with it? Because if it's about fights at 55, I do want to see Volk against Beneil, Oliveira, Sarukian, Chandler. Conor would be obviously epic, the whole featherweight championship history. But now you talk about business. Is that what he should be doing? Should it be about fights at 45? All those things got to be answered. And so that really, to me, makes it, where do we go for Volk past Ilia Topuria? And that's where it gets a little murky because it's like, I know what it means, and as much as I wanted it for Volk, you took it on 10 days' notice, you lost. Now we got to talk about you got to wait for someone to beat Islam or for Islam to leave. No fighter wants to hear that, that you have to wait for someone else to mess up because you can no longer do anything in your power to get it. So it's just tough for Volk. Like I said, one of the best fighters. Still, if you talk about overall and you put Islam and him 1A and 1B, one of the best fighters from a technical standpoint and physical standpoint in the world today. And just, we talk about the mental. You fight on a big stage. It's bigger than a talented fighter who doesn't have as much attention. All of that is there for Volk. But if the goal was getting that 55 belt and proving how good you were, it's a really tough pill to swallow this Monday morning. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, it really is because. And I wondered throughout the week if he was like, maybe I shouldn't have taken this fight. You're second guessing yourself because if you're thinking about the outcomes, the potential outcomes, and of course, victory is amazing. That's glory. That's legendary status. But if you don't win, then you have to start breaking it down into, okay, how did I lose? And this is probably the worst way to lose, right? You want, if at least you could prove that you could hang, that says something, and it might earn you a third shot, maybe soonish down the line, but to get KO'd or TKO'd, I think they called it officially a KO, but I feel like it should have been a TKO because if you don't get knocked out clean, right? That's not a knockout. But anyway.
Yeah, but if you fall asleep while during the ground and pound, I
Okay.
get you though. I get you though. It's close.
Yeah, it's almost semantics
Yeah.
there, but so when you lose like that, then it does put you in a tight spot, right? And then you have the pressure now of going down to your official weight class where you're the champ and reminding everyone that you're still the best, reminding everyone that they can't beat you, you're going to hold on to the belt for a long time, and then hoping you can get a shot back at 155. And, I think at this point, well, that's the thing is he's probably built in so much goodwill with the UFC, especially doing what he did on Saturday, stepping in the way he did. I bet he could get another title shot or, one fight away from a title shot at 155 when he's ready, without having to go, through the top five or, I'll put it this way. I think he's only just two fights away from or one fight away from a title shot at 155 versus, three or maybe even four if he hadn't have stepped up and really saved the UFC on this particular night. So he's not in the worst place. But mentally, I think that's the toughest position. That's the toughest struggle he's going to have right now, is just the what ifs, you know, having confidence in yourself that you're still the best at 145. And obviously he's talked a lot about this in a very Australian way, referring to the concerns in his mind as doing his head in, which is kind of a funny way to talk about it, right?
Yeah, very, very great way to say it. He did have a, you know, I don't want to say nonchalant, but he did speak about it more casually than a lot of people do.
Yeah.
You know, can I be real? That made me sad for this reason. I want to make it clear. Volk seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Salt of the earth, working class dude who's obviously so talented and works hard to be at this level that he's at in a very difficult sport. Honestly, he seems like a very chill guy who has his head on his shoulders, has a family, got, you know, he published the children's book, he's got the whole Cooking with Volk thing on his
Yeah.
YouTube channel. It really saddened me to know that he was feeling that kind of level of anxiety, that he
Me
felt like
too.
he needed this, he needed to do this. I mean, it's October. We're talking about January, 2 months with the holidays. Did he really have all this going on? And look, mind you, once again, it just goes to show you don't ever know what someone may be dealing with, right?
Yep.
Case in point. But yeah, you know, so if there's one thing I want to touch on before we move on to talk about Islam, is that I do hope that whatever he needs to find within himself, he can, because as much as I love watching Volk compete, I really do, I would hate to ever think he feels like he has to do this. Because as a fan and as a spectator of this and as a fellow human being, I would like him to feel like he can take the healthy approach to take time off, heal his body, prolong his career, especially at this level, so that we can see as many of those special moments like we did against Yair and Max and Brian Ortega, etc. Because I do want that. I don't want him to feel like, man, you know, I'd hate to think that he's out there and he's staying active because he has this level of anxiety or other struggles, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I wish that for Volk because it seems like a nice dude and I just want to put that energy out there. And look, he knows his body better than anyone. If you ask me, I feel like as of today, that's a little quick to turn it around and fight Ilia, but I'm going to trust him and the people around him. If you are honestly all squared away, physically, mentally, what have you, then by all means, go ahead, let's run it in Toronto or Canada, wherever they're having it. January, Ilia Topuria, let's go. But I want to put that energy out there for Volk and his well-being.
Yeah, for sure, man. It's props to him for, he just got kicked in the head, knocked out essentially, and on the mic, and but he's being open, and I think it's helpful for the world to see someone so tough, so dedicated to a combat sport, to be vulnerable, right? It's just so you can look at that and say, oh, okay, I kind of have those feelings too, and now I know I'm not the only one, especially someone like this. So I don't think he was being honest on purpose, like meaning trying to help others. He was just being himself, being honest. But yeah, man, it hurt a little bit, my heart too, because you could feel his inner conflict. You could feel it, you could relate to it. And he's talking about things that we have no experience with, fighting in a cage, all that stuff. But, him saying, like, I just didn't want to stay home. I just didn't, not stay home. I just didn't want to be. I like to be training and I want to fight in January. And you're watching this guy who just got kicked in the head and you're like, bro, you want to come back in January? Like, you're still sticking to that plan? Seriously? And then in the post fight, I also give props to, I don't know who it was, the media guy who, he pressed a little bit harder to get clarification from Volk. And, that's a tricky area to press harder on, but he did it tactfully, bringing in Tyson Fury to the conversation, and Volk, got a little emotional, but like, I don't know, man. It was important, impressive. It was honest, and I'm glad that that conversation was had a little bit. And hopefully, some hopefully it made him feel better just to say it out loud. You know what I'm saying?
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I know who you mean. I believe that was Oscar Willis. And I know he has a great relationship with Adesanya and them. And so okay. I think he has that rapport with a few, you know, like with Dan Hooker. He does the show with Dan Hooker. He has that rapport with a bunch of those high-level guys from the Oceania region. So
okay.
I think that's why he felt he had that flexibility to maybe expand on that topic. But I agree, obviously it's hard to navigate those as a media member, and I thought Oscar did really well in that moment. The reason why the 155 picture for Volk and getting a title shot is because it is very loaded now. Justin Gaethje knocked out Dustin Poirier, got the BMF belt, was in attendance. Everything is pointing to say he would be next in line. Charles Oliveira does have a win over Gaethje, but you can argue now, you know, Gaethje has two victories since then. Oliveira only has one. You could talk about the whole timing and wanting to see something new for Islam Makhachev. You got to talk about the Conor McGregor of it all. If he were to win, I know he's not even scheduled yet, but anytime you have a McGregor out there, you have to factor it into the equation. All of these things are very relevant. And I know that Islam kind of shot his shot. He said, have Charles and Gaethje fight each other. I'm also looking at the 170 belt, which is obviously going to be contested for in December with Colby Covington and Leon Edwards. All of this, you know, final note on it, that makes it difficult for Volkanovski to work his way into this conversation at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, I acknowledge it's a long road for him. And for Islam, that is quite the murderer's row of tasks ahead of you, if we're being honest. I don't know that there's a lot of fighters out there who can take out those three kind of fights back to back to back consecutively. Just imagine. So I acknowledge there is quite the shrouded future going on at 55, and particularly for Makhachev. I would say, for my money, the fight to make is him versus Gaethje at 55. Bilal Muhammad, I'm going to just say it, he's put his work in, he's paid his dues, he took the short notice fight, he won it. He deserves to fight the winner of Colby versus Leon. And then if Islam wins, then whatever happens with Bilal and them, Islam fights whoever is the welterweight champion late 2024. Maybe even around this time next year. I know that Islam's a big deal. Sorry, last note. Oh, no. I know Islam's a big deal. So if you told me they're going to do Islam versus Colby or Leon next, it's like, well, it's not like that's a, quote, bad option, bad choice.
Mm-hmm.
But I just feel like a bunch of these guys deserve to have their moment too. And it's like, let's just have this clarity. If Islam beats Gaethje, how big of a star is he at 55? Let's move him up. For Colby or Leon to fight Bilal also after winning their fight this December, it would be big also. But it's like, also acknowledge they're big names. If Islam moves up next fight, wouldn't be surprised. Anyway, my apologies. Let's go.
No, all good. You were just, that was a thinking man's pause, and I thought it was a toss it to you pause.
That's all. Sorry about that.
I feel like Islam has done amazing things at 155, but I don't think it's been enough. Like, you still gotta keep it going, man. So I'd like to see him stick around at 155 for a little bit longer. So if he is going to make the move, it's going to be granted the opportunity to make the move. I prefer, as you say, end of next year, 2024. Because we don't know what Edwards, Colby, Covington, that's probably going to be a 5-round brawl, you know, then which will then require, or, you know, will cause us to desire a rematch. And Islam Gaethje, that's probably going to be a war too. So, like, you know, keep the Islam, put a pin in it is what I'll say. And we'll readdress mid 2024, see how it looks.
So if Islam fights 55, who do you want him, Gaethje or Oliveira?
So if he gets, I think you said you prefer Gaethje, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay, that's why I was saying that. But in my head, I was thinking, I think it should go to Oliveira still, you know, he got the cut, okay? but that's the man who was next in line. So I feel like it should still be rescheduled. Islam is fresh as heck. So talk about who's ready to fight in January. Islam and Charles will be. Versus, Volk at 145. But I'd rather see Oliveira get the reschedule. But what does that mean for Gaethje then, though?
Yeah, I was gonna say, wait, what do you do to Justin
I know.
Gaethje, man? look, someone's getting shafted in this one, right?
Yeah, that's
Someone
true.
has to probably. I would argue, Oliveira might be, like I said, a fresh challenge for Islam. I think sells better than anything else for him right now, and that's why I love the Gaethje fight and the hype around Gaethje, especially in this moment. I like Oliveira as much as the next guy. He's cool. He's obviously on a roll again and had a lot of energy going into this rematch. But yeah, that's just how I feel. Obviously, look, where are we at with the winner of Conor and Chandler? Does Conor fight Chandler, etc.? That person's out there. We have Armin Sarukian and Beneil Dariush. That was made official recently, fighting in December. Maybe if Armin beats Beneil, maybe he fights Charles. There's a couple options out there, but it's like, I don't know, it's tough to figure out where we go from here for Charles Oliveira or Gaethje if they are the odd man out, you know? So we'll figure that out. We will get clarity soon. I have a feeling about that. This co-main event, Khamzat Chimaev, Kamaru Usman. First thing before anything, Khamzat knows this and he does it on purpose. He always looks evil in every thumbnail. On one of the embeddeds, he had that evil expression. It's like he's,
Yes.
his diabolical plan. The camera zooms in on him when he's in the 3-point crouch, right before the fight, and he flicks his tongue at Kamaru like he's the wolf about to eat. And it's like, bruh, you are the villain of the story and you enjoy it. I love it. I'm gonna just say that right now. I think it's great branding. Great moves strategically by him.
Yeah, he plays up to it
Smash
pretty
everybody.
effectively.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's.
man, like just seeing him little kind of gets like crazy eyes, and even my husband was watching it before the fight. I can't remember what interview it was, and he's like, "Oh, Usman's in trouble."
Hey, he keeps that same energy. I'm with it.
Yeah.
Look, the fight is what it was. I thought that obviously the grappling in the first round just really handled Usman, had him down early, kept him in under control most of it. Second round, a little more even. Khamzat did mention he felt like he had broken his hand. Wasn't grappling as much. Wasn't the Gilbert Burns scrap that we had, what was it? I believe that was last year. And then obviously, third round just keeps working. Beats Kamaru, unanimous decision. Once again, full credit to Kamaru Usman. 10 days notice, moved up in weight against a guy training to be an 85er. Held his own for the most part when a lot of people thought, hey, this could end very badly for him. And Khamzat gets it done. Just what were your thoughts on the performance?
Man, look, going into this card, when we talked last week, I said with my heart pick, I picked Volk, I think 5 rounds. Or no, I can't remember. But I picked Khamzat to ragdoll Usman and to finish him. I don't know when. I don't remember what my exact call was, but I really thought he was going to ragdoll him. And he did in the first round. But then took his foot off the gas pedal in rounds 2 and 3. And, I don't think Usman won either of those rounds. I'd have to go back and watch if, a lot of people think he did, but or one of them. But I was very impressed with Usman, man. Of the two short notice opponents, I didn't expect Usman to be the one to have more success. His grit, his toughness, his willingness to first to be able to defend the way he did in round one, and that big, head drop. Shuck attempt at the end. I mean, it wasn't an attempt, it was effective. He was about to get choked out, so he did the right thing, but he sacrificed his own head and slammed it into the canvas. But I was so impressed with his jab, his cross, like the aggression that he was displaying in round two and in round three. There was just brief moments. I wish he had just been able to string it together more. That's all. But, you know, that's a moral victory for Usman and has to be a huge confidence booster for him.
I mean, let's get right into the meat and potatoes of it now. Sean Strickland, he kind of brought this up. He wasn't all the way impressed with Khamzat. I think there was a little bit of that. I mean, your decision, Kamaru, who was came in on 10 days notice, bro.
Right, yeah.
Sean Strickland did put that story out there, said that there was some miscommunication. He challenged Khamzat, gloves, no gloves, we'll settle this. And Khamzat, quote, kind of backed out of it. And then it's like, I mean, I'll say this. I came away from his whole clip thinking, bruh, is there a rivalry between Sean Strickland and Khamzat? And am I into it? Like, I did not expect it. It kind of felt like they were just very independent entities that we were going to put together for a fight. I didn't realize, whoa, wait, there's beef. There's heat. There's a rivalry. Oh, my God. This is awesome.
Yeah.
You know what? Long story short, Dana White said it. Everyone said it. I'm here for it. What about you?
You know, yeah, I guess why not? It's two strong personalities that love to play up to the cameras in their own unique ways and very talented in their own unique ways. You know, Sean Strickland has that sneaky boxing style and that excellent defense. What's his takedown defense like? I don't know. But yeah, and then Khamzat, of course, we all know, we just saw what he can do. So I actually am up for it. It seems a little soon to get the call based on merit from Khamzat, you know, based on just, because when did he switch to, what was his last fight at welterweight, was who, Gilbert Burns?
Well, technically it was supposed to be Nate, and then it became Kevin Holland in September. Okay. So he's had about a year to bulk up, if I may say so.
So, yeah, I mean, are you skipping the line? Yeah, but when you make a name for yourself, you get to skip the line. That's the perks of a, you know, non-merit-based system in the UFC.
Well, also remember, this is also not entirely his fault. He was supposed to get a high-level middleweight, sorry, and it didn't happen, because not because of anything he did.
Of course, yeah. So, right, great point to remind us of. He had that opponent in Paulo Costa, you know, seasoned middleweight who's fought for the title.
It was kind of like Islam. I mean, you know, they're like, he didn't fight a high level guy. It's like, bruh, Benil got hurt, Rafael Dos Anjos kept getting hurt. I mean, what can we do?
Yeah,
it's not like they didn't schedule those fights for him, but
it's true, the trajectory is unstoppable at this point, and the UFC tried and tried, and so now he's left at the top with a victory over Usman, who, look, first time fighting at 185, but he put on a good enough fight to say that, yeah, Khamzat is the real deal, right?
Oh, yeah.
So let's just do it. I'm with it.
I'll also acknowledge, for context, Israel Adesanya came out, said he's taking a break. He doesn't plan to fight for a while. He isn't retired, but he said it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Jared Cannonier recently, you know, there was this whole talk. He was in talks to fight Khamzat. He actually hurt himself the day he got the call. And he's also not only obviously didn't fight Khamzat, he's out of his fight with Roman Dolidze. So that also eliminates the top two other options that would have been there for Strickland anyway. So this kind of all just, everything just, all signs now point to Khamzat. There's no detours left on the road. So
correct.
Right. Yeah, and I do know, it seemed like there was this narrative, and I'm gonna just assume people know things we don't, but a lot of things were implied and inferred, Khamzat's ability to travel for fights.
Right.
He is obviously big in Abu Dhabi. You could probably put him in many places in Europe, like Sweden, you know, Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to imagine you're not going to do Strickland versus Khamzat like one of the Vegas cards next year. Like, I mean, imagine them as main or co-main in March with Conor McGregor on the card too. That would be freaking fantastic. You know, or 4th of July. I acknowledge that may be at the timetable. You could put it anywhere, but I'm just like, I would hope that you could bring him stateside because that feels like a big fight. Also, low-key, I feel like Sean Strickland has earned the right to have his Vegas arena fight, not his Vegas Apex fight. So
Yeah.
Let's go. But yeah, I'll touch on that. I don't know what's going on with Hamzat's travel, but I'm hoping that it is no longer an issue. I'll just say that.
I mean, I bet the UFC can just make a phone call. You know what I'm saying?
Feel
So.
like they would have if it was that easy. But I digress.
Okay.
We got a lot to get into. This one, the Johnny Walker and Kalaya fight. They're still getting revved up. If anything, I love that last exchange before all the madness happened. Ankalaev just cracks Johnny to the body. Johnny like pretends to be hurt, and then he jumping knees Ankalaev, who reverses it, gets him to the ground, and then there's the illegal knee. And it looked like Ankalaev was maybe trying to go for the chest, just quite bluntly pops Johnny in the face, gets the eye. There's a bit of a cut, but for the most part, Johnny looks fine. The doctor comes in, checks him, analyzes, does his whole thing. And then this, I'll be honest, in the moment, I didn't hear it all the way. I don't think they had the best audio for it. They didn't have the boom mic close enough. We're just aware the doctor's talking to Johnny. There's this confusion. And then the ref is even like, the doctor says to the ref, clearly motions to him, the ref waves it off. Johnny is still oblivious. He feels like, I didn't tell him I'm done. I told him I'm good. He puts his hands up. He's ready to fight Ankalaev. And the ref is just telling him, no, man, the fight's over. And then that leads to pandemonium. Dana White gets in the cage. We get a replay and we hear after the fact, apparently, Johnny told the ref, asked him, where are you? And Johnny told him, I'm fighting in the desert. By the way, there was also this talk. If you asked him and he told you Abu Dhabi, technically that's incorrect. You'd have to say United Arab Emirates, UAE. Abu Dhabi is more like a region within the country of the
Yep.
UAE. Either way, the fact is, that is apparently, there seemed to be a lot of language barriers on both sides, but what it comes down to was the ref. Or sorry, the doctor made a bad judgment call. And this is compounded by the incident with Victor Henry earlier, which I'm going to talk about, but
Yeah.
let's focus on the Johnny Walker of it all. What was your reaction to this?
Man, that was so silly. It's look, first of all, that's what Johnny Walker gets for being a clown with the pretending to be hurt in the with the body shot, right? Pretends he's hurt, goes for the flying knee, doesn't work, and then he gets taken down. If he hadn't have done the clowning, this none of this would have happened. But okay. The illegal strike was plain. Lee clear, that's what happened. I'll say this as far as the question from the doctor and the answer from Johnny Walker. Even I get a little bit confused sometimes with Abu Dhabi, Saudi Arabia, Riyadh, United Arab Emirates. I still kind of get them confused in my head sometimes. I have to stop and, like, draw a little diagram and remind myself which goes with which. That's just me, Westerner. Fool who doesn't have a great grasp of geography. All that is to say, I kind of don't blame the guy. Was he trying to be clever or did he just not remember exactly which country he was in? That answer would have worked in on Family Feud, right? It wouldn't have worked on Jeopardy. But if I'm the doctor, I think I would have said, okay, you're right generally, but let's get a little more specific. Like, he didn't follow up. He didn't, like, he just asked him and then that was it. Come on, man. Like, the guy just got hit in the head. Give him a little bit of time, talk to him some more, and then ask the question again, right? Because he did have officially 5 minutes. Is that correct? The doctor shut it down before that time even elapsed. So it was a bonehead move by the doctor. And again, Johnny Walker's a tricky dude. So I don't know for sure if he just said the desert because that's where they were and he was trying to be funny or because he literally couldn't remember. Now, is it that he couldn't remember because of the blow to the head or he couldn't remember because he too has fuzzy sense of geography? I don't know.
If I may say so, I mean, I would. He could also have just seen it as like casually. It's like, where are you? The desert.
Yep.
Like, psh. Hey, in Vegas, where are you? The middle of the desert.
The desert, bro.
You dang right.
Yeah.
I mean, do you need more? It's like, do you need me to say Etihad Arena, UAE, west side
Yep.
of town? I don't know. I felt like there was a judgment call that was missed. I feel like the doctor also didn't expand, like, no, what city? I'm sure he would have said Abu Dhabi, UAE, Etihad, something along those lines. But instead, I think Johnny felt like he gave an adequate answer. And the fact is, he just looked fine. He looked fine. The time wasn't used up like you just brought up. And it felt like the doctor, and to an extent, the referee, just made a call in the moment. And it was like, look at him, check him, talk to him, time. None of those things I felt were done and should have. Real fast, I hope they rebook it. I'm not saying they're gonna put him on the MSG card, although they probably deserve that. Remember, that's the thing about these things. It's like if a basketball game gets canceled, they can't just run it the next night. You know, you got to make weight again and all this and diet, and the human body shouldn't be doing that too many times anyway with the weight cuts. My expectation is they will rebook it soon. What I will bring up now, the doctor. Earlier during the prelims, there's the fight between Javid Basharat and Victor Henry. Victor Henry takes the probably nastiest low blow I've seen. I'll say it ever. I don't, off the top of my head, I can't remember a worse one. There have been other ones that stop fights, but that man practically suffered TKO due to low blow, face planted after he ate at the shot low. This same doctor told him that wasn't a low blow, and we're going to brush with TMI. Victor's cornerman, former heavyweight champion Josh Barnett, tweets out with Ariel Helwani, said, "Yeah, we got an ultrasound. His Mr. Peanuts are more like Mr. Mandarins."
Oh my God.
And I'm like, I'm sorry, but what is up with this doctor? I mean, how can you have two calls like this in one night? Or two incidents like this. And look, I'm aware they're not in Nevada. There's not a state athletic commission. It's a little more of an independent show over there in Abu Dhabi. But there's got to be some kind of repercussion. I mean, I don't know if fine is what I'm looking for, like a paying a fine. But there's got to be some kind of evidence that says you had to prove you have improved as an official before we let you in on a more important show again. Sorry, not sorry. I felt like, how can you let this happen like this? Sorry. And that's all I got for it.
Yeah, man, I don't know. It's not his, like, at first of all, it's not his place to tell the fighter, you know, what happened to him. His job is just to go in there and examine him and, you know, find out if he's okay or not okay. But to just come in and be like, nah, you didn't get hit in the balls. It's like, whoa, bro.
Let me show you.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
let's
I
unpack this
have
really.
evidence, I promise.
And if you, obviously I'm not a man, but we've seen low blows in the sport. This is, yeah, probably the most severe reaction I've also ever seen to face plant, like on purpose,
Yeah.
is because you're in severe pain. Like he literally dropped to his knees and just fell on his face. That's how much pain he was in. You can see it. And so, like, you know, I think doctors, that's something they are supposed to do is observe. You look at the person and they're in extreme pain. So why would you try to contradict that to their face? It doesn't make any sense. And so, apart from that, just have a little bit of empathy, a little bit of sympathy, and try to make this person feel better. Try to, you know, at some point he was like, maybe you can stand up and how, okay, that's good things to do, right?
I mean, one thing I would say in that defense, that almost felt like you didn't even need the doctor. The ref could see this man is not going to get back up in 5 minutes. He just face planted.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, and so it does make me wonder, like, would you even need a doctor for that? Like, it's not like he is going to examine him right there anyway. So, you know, when it's a head shot or a cut, they have a little flashlight, they look in the eyes, blah, blah, blah. What the heck are you going to do for a low blow? But I feel so bad for him. You know, I'm sure every man around the world did too, because the extreme pain that he was in was obvious. And nobody's going to fake it to that degree. It's not like he was getting bulldozed in the fight. It was even, you know, mostly. So I feel for the guy, and I also am really mad at his opponent for, like, in the cage he was very understanding, he apologized, but then coming out later and saying, oh, he faked it. Come on, bro, like, you can't do that.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I'm not gonna go ahead and look up the name. I don't feel like that is the way to, like, I don't want to say dox, but put him on blast. But we know who he is. We know what he looks like. I need to see some improvement before I want to hear that you're officiating once again, you know? And I'll leave it at that. Two more from Abu Dhabi. Paulo Costa. So, I mean, there's the whole thing with Hamzat and Dana at the press conference about how scared Costa was and how hurt he was. Dana had Costa's back. Hamzat kind of played into the villain thing. Didn't hate on it. Camera shows Costa during the event. Fans are booing, and I'm like, wow, like, you literally seen several pictures of his arm. I'm pretty sure the guy couldn't fight. And then I guess a fan freaking went at Costa, and Costa has to start fighting him in the stands. And then my favorite part, Costa tweets out after the fact, I told you guys I could have fought tonight. A plus, well done, my man. But anyway, what was your reaction to all
Well, it
that?
was hilarious. My favorite part of this whole thing was the man filming it, and
Oh,
I
yeah.
it sounded like that was his friend, because he's like, hey, it's Leo. Leo, what are you doing? What are you doing? Because he couldn't believe that his freaking friend was out there trying to fight Paulo Costa. So that was pretty hilarious. You've all been there when you see a friend have, well, I was gonna say one too many, but do they allow alcohol there?
You know what? I'm still unsure if they do.
Well, whatever. He was
Someone will tell
jacked
us.
up on something, maybe adrenaline. But
Yeah.
that's pretty ballsy, man. Like, what kind of mindset are you in to think that you should challenge a fighter to a fight?
And that it's a good
And that's a
idea.
good idea, and that you're gonna traverse these people, security guards, to try and do it. And then now you can't watch the rest of the fight. I'm assuming they kicked him out. I don't think you can do that and stay in your seat, but maybe
Yeah.
not. I don't know.
Once again, Costa's reaction. I told you guys I could have fought tonight. All right. You win. You won that one on social media. I'll give you that one. He still got a dub. By the way, he became the fourth person with a staph infection to fight on Saturday.
Oh, God.
Let me make sure I don't flip the name. Mike Breeden, Muhammad Naimov, Victoria Durkova, and not in the cage, but Paulo Costa. Look, those aforementioned three fighters all admitted to having staph infection. Dudakova had the most,
Oh.
I don't want to say obscene, but she kind of TMI about, you know, things popped and were open while
Yep.
during her fight. I get past the grossness of it all. Huge, huge risk to everyone involved. Your opponent, the fact that, you know, that's now on the canvas that everyone is going to be on, and the fact that multiple fighters did this, and I acknowledge that this is very difficult because fighters, if you'd fight with a staph infection that's doing this to you, you probably really needed the paycheck and you did lose a full camp. I get it. I understand that aspect of it, but to put the fighters at risk, to put yourself and your opponent is just like, how. It saddens me that we don't have a precedent for if this happens to you late in the game, we could take care of you, you know? And at the same way, I get it. And Dana White says it sometimes. It's not my favorite thing, if I'm being honest. If you get hurt, you don't get paid. Or, sorry, I mean, if you don't fight, you don't get paid. That kind of hurts me because it's like, I mean, these people are putting in a full camp and they're not trying to shortchange people, right? But you know what? And even Dana White, I would have lied all the way home. Why would you admit it at this point? And I'm just like, it was gross. And then it was just like, it just made me feel bad, man. What was your reaction?
Yeah, grossness was the first reaction I had, especially for Miss Dudakova. But I kind of agree with Dana White as far as, like, you made it this far. Why in the heck would you talk about it now? Because now everyone's gonna be like, what the heck? It's gonna probably require a change in policy. Like, I don't know what kind of doctor's examination they have before fights. But I'm thinking now you're gonna have to be naked, if not almost completely naked, to have a doctor make sure you don't have staph somewhere. Because if people are going to be going in the cage like this, like, you know, you can't have that. So what I don't know is, and maybe you can tell me, did all these fighters win or lose their fights?
I think Dudakova won. I gotta double check the other two.
Okay. Because I'm thinking, like, if you lost, maybe that was why you would say, I lost, you know, I had staph. But if you won, I'd just keep my mouth shut. I wouldn't say anything. You know, think about Kevin Lee. He had that big one on his chest. I can't remember what fight it was. He didn't say anything. Someone did ask him, and he's like, yeah, it's that. But no one's trying to admit it because, yeah, then they're not going to fight. So if they had, as you say, if they had a guarantee of protection by admitting it, then they would. But since they know if they admit it, they can't fight, of course they're going to keep it under wraps. But I agree with Dana White on this. If you kept it under wraps this far, you know, keep it there till you get home.
Yeah, it just, like I said, it's always made me feel bad when they do stuff like that. Just
Yeah.
makes me feel like you're taking risks and
You are, for
all that.
sure.
It's just like if I'm an opponent and I got a staph infection, it's like do I sue? Like, come on, they knew you're not supposed to and you did it to me anyway. So
That's true.
I'd like a precedent for these kinds of things 'cause it's like as much as I feel for the fighter losing out on camp and money, I also feel like, well, if I'm your opponent, sorry, not sorry, but what about me? You got me sick, you know, and expletive, expletive, you know?
Yeah, for
So
sure. Yeah,
I
yeah.
feel like we need to have a little more of a contingency to these. What's next? What's next? Wild night, weird night. Obviously there was a lot Islam had in his speech, Hamzat too. I know there was some fans caught and there was look, the Israel-Palestine situation kind of looms over everything right about now, right? And I acknowledge that it's not a apples to oranges situation or you know, just a very black and white situation, sorry. There's a lot of history in the whole situation. And you know, one thing I will say, injustice against anybody for any reason, regardless of what came first, what came second, is just there's no place for that ever. In 2023, in the 1800s, in the 19 whatevers, there's just not. And so whatever everything going on, you know, that's all I would say about that is that my energy is for an end of it, this on both sides for all people. You got two countries with people who probably just want to live their lives and, you know, go out there, enjoy the sun, eat some ice cream on a warm day, and enjoy life. And instead, we have a very different world. And, you know, I would push for the end of that and the situation that they have going on right now. And look, the fighters acknowledged it a lot. There was a little bit of that there. There was the doctor of it all. And I'll say this, Natalie. So they tried to stack it. They did the best they could. But I couldn't help but think that, like, the story of Saturday was not Islam beating Volk. It wasn't Hamzat moving on. It was more about everything else that happened. I went away from that thinking this might be one of the most poorly officiated, not from a referee, but from doctors and after the fact medicals event in UFC history. What were your thoughts?
They were pretty the Johnny Walker one on its own was pretty egregious. And so, yeah, I'd say that alone is could give it that designation, I guess. But then when you combine it with the Victor Henry one, it's pretty bad. And yeah, the night was, or well, night for them, day for us. It was, there were some good fights. I'm not knocking it at all. I enjoyed the fights. And when you get a main event with a finish like that, even if it's the guy you didn't want to win, it's still exciting. So overall, I'm not so down on it, but yeah, there were definitely some crazy stuff going on. It was just a wild night. Sometimes it happens.
Yeah, it's just one of those things happen the way they were gonna happen, I guess. But yeah, look, moves on, keep on going, see where we go to now. This Saturday. And you know, once again, MMA news, if I'm being honest, we kind of got all the news we wanted last week.
Yep.
We're going straight to the fights this Saturday in the morning as well. I'm not gonna lie, kind of like it now.
Yeah, I know, right?
Tyson Fury, Francis Ngannou, the fight we didn't think would happen is happening and it's finally here. Look, if you don't know, where have you been? Tyson Fury, lineal heavyweight champion. If you don't know what that means from the inception of the heavyweight title, when they created it years ago, that he is the guy who beat the guy who beat the guy. So, for example, when it started back in the day and it was owned by, you know, one holder, went into the hands of Muhammad Ali, to the guy who beat Muhammad Ali, to the Mike Tyson eventually was lineal heavyweight champion. I believe Vladimir Klitschko went on to have it. Tyson Fury beat Klitschko. He is in the line of heavyweight champions, the guy who defeated the previous holder.
Yeah.
He's also the WBC champion. You probably remember his trilogy with Deontay Wilder. If you don't know who Deontay Wilder is, type it into YouTube. Come back to me and tell me about what you think of a guy whooping that dude 3 times. Put all that together. And he's fighting Francis Ngannou. And Francis, look, knocked out every former heavyweight title holder who was active at the same time, besides Verdum, if I'm not mistaken. Knocked out Junior Dos Santos. Knocked out Cain Velasquez. Knocked out Stipe Miocic. Jairzinho Rozenstruik, when Jairzinho was taking dudes out within under 2 minutes for two fights. Just his road leading to the title. Just super impressive guy. Left the UFC, left money on the table, roughly 10 million, to make exponentially more money before he even fought for, if, before he even had the Tyson fight sign, was paid by PFL, now got paid again by the boatload for this fight with Tyson Fury. And now he's kind of going out there with everything to gain, nothing to lose. Natalie, can I tell you something? Because I heard this. People ask, what is the story of this fight? Like, it's not just the, oh, well, the boxing champion versus UFC champion. To me, it's like, if you had to sell this story, what is the conflict? What is the hook? It is Francis Ngannou bet on himself. Left this rags to riches story of this guy who came from Africa and went through all these hardships that are documented, made it to stardom in the UFC, left it on the table because he knew he could find an even better deal, and it is now materialized for him, and he has the chance to complete the second Cinderella story of his professional career, taking on the biggest star that the heavyweights have right now in Tyson. I mean, what more do you need? Talk to me about this one.
Yeah, man, this is an incredible story. If you just pick one of the fighters in this card, in this matchup, it's an incredible story, right? Francis Ngannou, origins, coming from Cameroon, the shoveling the sand, you know, being homeless in France, and deciding that he just wanted to box. He wanted to compete in MMA and doing everything he had to do to get there. And if you ever hear him in an interview, extremely confident, but extremely humble and noble, even. That's something that you don't really, that's a word I rarely use to describe anyone, but he's very noble. Just, you know, a kind, gentle man that can also punch your head off. He knows his worth. He's willing to sacrifice some things to gain other things, you know, sticking to his guns, right? Willing to lose the relationship with the UFC in order to move on and get what he believes is his true value. And then putting these things out in the world, like I want to fight, compete in, you know, professional boxing, and ending up being able to secure this fight with the greatest heavyweight boxer Tyson Fury. It's an incredible story. You look at the Gypsy King story, also a tumultuous path to victory, having to pick himself up off the floor many times, even in the ring against Deontay Wilder, that first fight where, you know, literally it was like Lazarus rising from the dead, you know, and an incredible personality, so fun, so charismatic, on the mic, always saying the right things, ready to go, also open with his, you know, issues with, you know, mental health and all that stuff. So two incredible figures in the world of combat sports, finding a way to compete in the ring for a lot of money, to entertain a lot of people, and you know they're both going to have their foot on the gas pedal. They both have a lot to, well, and, Fury doesn't have anything to prove, right? He is, in my opinion, the greatest heavyweight. He's so skilled, so light on his feet. There's a lot for Ngannou here. This is a big moment. And so, but they're in there to give the fans a show, is what I ultimately believe they're there to do. So I'm so excited. I'm really impressed with these two gentlemen. And I'm glad this got together. I'm glad this was able to happen. I just watched the promo that Top Rank released. I don't know if you've seen it yet. The one where they're like punching walls and heavy bags and causing.
Haven't yet.
Dude, you got to see it. Because for as much as I love the UFC and we love the UFC, this promo is so amazing. And I have not seen anything that cool come out of the UFC yet. So, you know, the marketing machine in the world of boxing is still in superior to the marketing machine in MMA. Check it out. And, man, I'll toss it back to you. But I'm very excited about this fight because these are two awesome people coming together to fight.
Yeah, you know, one thing I will say is that I feel the difference in everything. I think that people, especially in today's day and age, this is a different time than when we had Mayweather-Pacquiao and a different time than when we had Mayweather-McGregor. And, you know, I mean, today, I mean, look what we had last week. We're talking about Dylan Danis and Logan Paul and the Misfits stuff and, you know, a couple, you know, just a few weeks before that, Canelo, you know, fighting. And then we've got it's been a very busy year for UFC. There's so much combat sports content out there. One thing I will say I notice, and you probably do as well, or maybe not. I know your Instagram feed is very different to mine. I feel the difference without the UFC push. I remember Mayweather McGregor. You probably do also.
Oh, yeah.
It felt like this stuff was everywhere. All of this, you know, all the boxing media talked about it. All the MMA media talked about it. And not that we're not, but it just, I think that the UFC machine and the push they can give you is real.
Yeah.
The UFC machine churned out hours of Mayweather McGregor content, and they had the. And once again, TV is different. Streaming is a bigger deal than it was back then, that's for sure. But, you know, they had all these promos and it was just so in your face, right? If I'm being honest, I can't tell you that I feel like this fight has been in my face. I feel like we've had a lot to talk about. And maybe that's because the MMA media, UFC hasn't had to worry about promoting it. Mm-hmm. UFC is worried about Abu Dhabi and UFC is worried about Jon Jones. And it's like, we're not really talking about, oh, you know, what's going on with Francis Ngannou and Tyson Fury. And I think that that's a very tangible thing you could feel. It felt like the UFC, obviously they always do events, but it was just like, when Mayweather-McGregor happened, UFC wanted your attention on Mayweather-McGregor also. They didn't try to also put on a UFC event. This time, because it's not in their wheelhouse, the MMA media is so split. Like, yes, we have a fight, but then it's like, we have a UFC pay-per-view going on, for crying out loud. Let's go. So you feel the difference. That being said, right about now, no UFC on Saturday. I personally feel like this is the perfect storm for something huge to happen. I think as the week goes on, fans are going to feel that swell of, you know, support. Mm-hmm. I think that, like you talked about the promo, like I said, did you see the statues? Tell me you found the statues.
I haven't seen it. Let me look at it.
I need to send this to you. Freaking these giant statues in the UK over the River Thames with Tyson and Francis. I love the poster. of them both draped in that royal garb, and they both have crowns, the king of the UK, the king of Africa, and I'm like, bro, it's beautiful promotion. And it's just like I need the fans in it
Oh
now
yeah,
because
dude, that's
that's,
incredible.
yeah, it sets it off, right?
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. Yeah.
And it's like, I get it. There's so much different content out there. It's just time to get back to enjoying a big fight. Let's go.
Exactly, dude.
The X's and O's, in my opinion, are probably the most boring part of the fight, ironically.
Yeah.
Francis will catch him or he won't, right? I think
That's
that's a
it.
general consensus.
Yep.
As always, in a fight like this, I acknowledge it. I mean, Tyson Fury is Tyson Fury. Francis has had to focus a lot of his training on guys who maybe want to take him off of his feet, throw kicks, clinch him. Boxing's a different ball game. And he's been working hard. Tyson Fury's been doing this most of his life, exclusively. Anything can happen, and I think on paper, yes, there's a lot to analyze, and you could give it more X's and O's. At the end of the day, your heart tells you Francis will catch him or he won't. He'll get some special out of the hat or he won't. But on paper, it looks like it should be Tyson Fury's fight. You know what? Here, I'll tip the hand just for the drama. Tyson Fury, sorry, Francis Ngannou first round KO. Here we go.
Holy moly,
I'm
that
gonna
was
just let
deep.
I'll leave it at that.
Wow.
I'll leave it at that. You know what? We could say whatever we want, right? Let's go.
Yeah, because it is that. I mean, Tyson Fury is a superior boxer, of course. He's been doing boxing his whole life. He outboxes the best heavyweight boxers, and this is a heavyweight MMA guy, champion, former champion, coming in to box. So what usually happens when an MMA guy goes into the boxing ring against a boxer or someone who has, like Jake Paul, been focused on specifically boxing for a number of years, they lose, right? Even the best, and Anderson Silva couldn't beat Jake Paul. Now, of course, we don't have to get into the age difference and all that stuff, but so we have a precedent there for what happens when Conor McGregor, someone like Conor McGregor, goes into the cage with someone like Floyd Mayweather. Conor McGregor held his own for 10 rounds, right? He did okay. At the end there, he was getting beat up. But Francis Ngannou has that special thing, which is when you're in a heavyweight fight, you have knockout power, you have the bombs. And he has hurting bombs. He's used them almost exclusively in his MMA career, except against Ciryl Gane. And that's what you have to expect from Ngannou. It's what you're going to rely on, right? You've seen that footage of him hitting mitts with Mike Tyson, and the comments were not kind. And I wondered, is that just him taking it easy, trying to, make us think one thing and, underestimate him? Probably, because I've seen other footage of him moving better, moving faster. That being said, to go from the top of the food chain in MMA to how many years layoff has it this at this point? 1.5, 2, I don't know.
It's been about
Straight into the ring against
2 years, yeah.
Tyson Fury, the best heavyweight boxer, lineal champ, as you laid out. That's a lot to ask for. Is there a man that we know of that can rise to that occasion? Yeah, his name is Francis Ngannou, who's overcome so much that this is probably nothing in the grand scheme of things of his life. Yeah, this guy. Does he have the ability to knock down Tyson Fury? Yeah, I mean, Deontay Wilder did it. Does he have the ability to knock him out? Heck yeah. Is he going to catch him? I don't know. But probably he's going to catch him a few times. Is he going to be able to land the big one that sends him to the moon? It's entirely possible. Tyson Fury, I think they faced off last week. He looked real soft. Now, he's never a buff
He kind
dude,
of
right?
always does,
Right, he's
though.
never buff. He just had a little extra meat around the waist. And does that necessarily mean a bad thing? No. I mean, when he fought Deontay, I think the first time,
Looked the same, didn't look too cut.
didn't look too cut, but I think that was the criticism that his dad put out afterwards, saying, I told him he was too lean. He needs to be heavier. So I think, unlike most other fighters, for Tyson Fury, being a little soft in the midsection is not a detriment. It just adds to the power in his punches, because the lightness on his feet doesn't get diminished with the addition of weight. So, all that being said, Tyson Fury says he's just going to jab him to death. Ngannou, you know, I don't know what he's saying. Probably he's saying he's going to knock him out. But I love what you said. I love your prediction. I want that to happen. Even though I'm a fan of Tyson Fury, wouldn't it be redemption for all of MMA fans this whole period of MMA fighter versus boxer to have a victory like this, to have Francis Ngannou go in there and knock Tyson Fury to the moon?
I mean, it would definitely be something like I said, we could say anything. I just I mean, you know how I feel. I think of the paying fan. Let them have a great fight. Let everyone have a good showing for themselves. That's my hope. I'll tell you what would break my heart is if we're here next Monday and we're talking about how hard it was to watch Ngannou take a L from Tyson for a long period of time, you know? So if anything but that, I'm good with. I can live with. It'll be a good showing. So yeah, we'll get right into it. I mean, obviously next Saturday the UFC machine moves on. We got Jilton Almeida taking on Derek Lewis, all-time knockout leader, taking on the jiu-jitsu ace. And then John Jones, Stipe Miocic is on the horizon. We can't wait to talk about that. So, what are your thoughts as we round out the end of October?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking about this fight. This is going to be, 294 was a big fight. And even if the changes in opponents hadn't occurred, and even if Volk hadn't have been KO'd in the first round, it still wouldn't have been as big as this boxing match that's coming up on Saturday. So this is going to be the combat sports highlight of the month. And I'm looking forward to this and this alone.
I mean, let's go. Guys, once again, thank you for listening. Remember, like, comment, subscribe. We'll be back next week.